Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. I'm glad Joan Pride's here, too, because she's our good friend, longtime member of our Brain Trust, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's here. Joan, welcome back.
I'm here. Thank you, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Are we a little safer today than we were maybe a week or so ago?
Only if you mean because Congress has gone off on vacation for a week.
Bingo. You've lurched uncontrollably to the exact point I was trying to make.
Right.
Yeah, I feel a little safer, don't you? I mean, isn't there kind of just a, like a peace that falls over the country when they leave town?
Yeah, I feel like I'm on vacation, too.
Well, I didn't say I felt like I was on vacation. I just feel like there's a little bit of a peace, you know, that kind of falls over.
Less anxiety.
Yeah, exactly. So Kiplinger this week, Joan, says that we can expect recession talk to rev up soon.
Now, I'm amazed you even said the R word
I'm just reading it. I don't make these things up. I just read what they say.
Okay. But even reading, I thought you would use the R word anyway.
Well, I think it's such a far shot, long shot, that it's okay to say it now.
Well, and just so the folks know, we're not saying there's going to be a recession. We're just saying that the recession talk is going to rev up, but we're
not talking about it.
We're not buying into it.
A likely downturn revision for first quarter economic. So you're saying maybe that the first quarter may be actually revised downward soon. You think it will fall down to initial 1.3 estimate, which is pretty low, Joan.
Right, but we're not saying that when it's revised downward, it will be revised down to a negative number. Just that it will be revised down 1.3, which is a pretty low number. It's almost no growth at all.
That's almost, and I hate to say it this way, but that's almost a European number, isn't it?
Yes.
Ugh.
That's exactly right.
I'm going to go wash my mouth out with soap. Yeah. I can't believe
I
said that.
How could you say such a thing? Yeah.
But no, that is a troubling number. But you know, Joan, here's the thing. When I look around, when I talk to people, when I sort of go out into the marketplace, it doesn't feel like that kind of. I mean, I know that there are housing problems. I know the gas prices are hurting a lot of people, but. I don't know I don't know that I'm seeing a lot of other indicators that this is something that's systemic.
Well, certainly the stock market would agree with you.
What happened
to the S&P yesterday?
Well, tell us about it.
Yeah, well, the S&P reached, I believe, the highest point since the bad times of September 11th.
Well, the Dow Jones was up, 111 or something like
and
that?
The Dow Jones is over, over 13,000 now?
It's almost 2,000 more than the high from 2000.
Gee.
Which was 1177 or something like that.
Yeah.
So, and Joan, here's another thing that I keep coming back to, and I circle this in your economic forecast little table here that you guys always, the table you always have on the front page. Mm-hmm. Today it's economic forecast. You're projecting, Kiplinger's projecting another 1.3 million jobs this year.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I mean, that's what gets me. I mean, if you're creating that many new jobs, I mean, the economy is not going to be too bad.
I would think not.
When I talk to my economist experts, Joan, mm-hmm. economy, our economists, I should say, and I ask them, I say, explain to me, we've got all these different, indicators that sort of contradict each other. And I asked them, have you ever seen a time like this where you had low unemployment? High stock market, the economy seems to be off, high gas prices, bad real estate construction industry. Have you ever seen this many indicators when things keep tricking along as they have been? And they all say no. They all say no.
Wow.
I mean, I've never seen anything like this. Have you?
Yeah. No. I have not. But I'm a lot younger than you are.
And you've been studying this for decades, haven't you?
Right.
So... you guys say that we're going to have a meager 2% growth this year.
Right. I guess that is meager, but I certainly wouldn't want it to be overheated.
Let's put something in perspective here, though, John. 1990, you know what the U.S. economy was? $6 trillion.
Okay.
Today, it's going to be about $13 trillion this year, around $13 trillion. Mm-hmm. So that's more than double, okay?
Yes.
So don't we have to put percentage growth in perspective? If our economy is more than doubled, is 2% that, you know, think about this, Joan. When we talk about European economy only growing at under 2% or something like that,
right.
You know, the U.S. economy is 13 trillion. The closest economy to that is Japan, and it's less than half of the U.S. economy.
Gee.
So then you've got all these other countries.
That's an interesting little factoid there.
You got all these other countries underneath China that are less than that. So they got these little bitty economies, really, if you think about it. I mean, the U.S. economy is the 800-pound gorilla on the planet. So 2%, maybe, are we getting to a point, Joan? Here's my question. Are we getting to a point where it's unreasonable to expect 3% for a $13 trillion economy?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. 2%. In other words, 2% for an economy of that size still is pretty good growth.
That's my
just
point.
Just for in terms of volume.
Well, we get so torqued about sometimes about China and India having 8, 9, 10% growth. Well, folks, mm-hmm. their economy is a fraction of ours. It's a lot easier to grow a trillion-dollar economy 10% than it is a $13 trillion economy 3%. So maybe we just need to take a chill pill, you know, Joan.
Right.
Because apparently we're doing some things right here, aren't we?
Sure. Well, you would think so.
Well, by golly, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But housing, you guys say housing is still going to be a little shaky all the way into next year.
Yes, we do, and that's even despite the fact that you had a spike of sales in new homes in April. We kind of discounted that and said that prices are going to keep falling, and starts are only going to be about 1.45 million, and it doesn't have a comparison figure there, so I can't tell you how bad 1.45 million is. It doesn't sound bad.
Okay, Joan, let's look at the generational wave thing. Let's combine the job creation with the generational wave thing.
Okay.
We got more and more. Well, I'm going to have to. That's a great cliffhanger, Joan. They're going to have to wait till I get back after these messages, because we got to take a quick one, folks. We got to sell some stuff. It's 20 after the hour. But I have an excellent point, which I'm going to make right after these messages. 20 after. Joan Pride is our guest. Stay with us.
Everybody's looking.
That's from the Wayback Machine, ladies and gentlemen. That's little Buddy Holly and the Crickets. I still miss him, Joan, after all these years.
I'm sure.
Buddy Holly. But sometimes, Joan, I try to imagine what the world would look like if Buddy Holly had not been killed when he was. Don't you? You do that, don't you, yourself?
All the time.
Even though he died before you were born, right?
Jim.
Okay, here's my point about the economy. We in the generational thing. You didn't think I'd remember what I was talking about, did you, Joan?
No, I did not.
Okay, here's the thing. You got some economic factors, and you got some generational factors. You've got some demographic factors.
Right.
Joan, the trailing end of the Gen Xers are being replaced in their 20s by the Gen Ys.
Yes.
By the echo boomers, which some people say could be as much as 100 million people.
Jeez.
By the time they get through making all these babies for that generation.
Right.
There could be as many as 100 million, which that's the reason they call them the echo boomers.
Right, right.
See, it's Gen X, but Gen Y, but are also the echo boomers. But
so maybe how old would they be right now?
Well, some of them are in their 20s, see.
Oh, I like this group because they can pay into Social Security for
exactly,
me.
Exactly. So some of them are...
We need to get them really good jobs.
They're starting to come into their 20s. But the point is that all of that... is, you know, these people are going to start renting apartments. They're going to start buying for apartments, which is going to allow, you know, you got more and more of the Gen Xers buying houses. You got more and more boomers who are going to have two houses as they, you know, as they retire and want to live in two different places. You've got all that. That's going to help the housing economy. And then you've got 1.3 million new jobs that we're creating on top of 4 or 5 years of 1.3 million jobs a year, 1.67 million jobs a year over the last 3 or 4 years. You've got all of that. To me, that's fundamental for a solid economy in the future if the government doesn't screw it up.
Right. Well, that's
which,
the big if. That's a,
which
that's
they could,
a rub.
Which they very well yeah. may. They very
yeah.
well may.
Yeah.
And one example would be, and we'll talk about this in a minute. I'm going to hold that thought. There's something we're going to talk about that in a minute when we get
okay.
over to spending and taxes. But I just think the economy is taking a breather right now, Joan.
Okay.
And I don't think that there's anything fundamentally wrong with our economy that lower gas prices wouldn't fix instantaneously. What do you think?
Well, yeah, and I think the gas price situation is probably the linchpin right now, because you hear people saying that they're cutting back on travel, cutting back on other purchases and things like that. That could make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move over and talk about, Joan, talk about on top of page two, selling.
Yes.
You guys point out that the internet sales is going to keep growing, and we talked about this a little bit in the last hour about taxing internet sales and $260 billion in internet sales in 2007, and you're predicting $300 billion in 2008.
But what's interesting to me about that is that's only 10% of all retail sales.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that sounds like a big number,
but
it just shows you what a marathon runner the American consumer is.
Well,
which
exactly.
We've always said.
Exactly, Joan. And you know, the thing about it, Joan, is with the internet sales, this is getting to be a number that is a blink level for some folks. And
that is, I'm sorry, a what?
A blink level.
A blink level.
This number. One of the things that internet sales is going to create is it's going to create a greater interest by states to tax those sales.
Oh yeah, that's right.
See,
that's
most right. internet sales are not taxed now.
Right.
If I sell you something off of my website in your country, in your state, if I don't have a nexus in your state, if I don't have a business location in your state, I don't have to charge you tax.
Right.
Now, you're probably supposed to remit that tax yourself to your own state, but nobody does it.
No.
And so the states are losing revenue. And my point is, when I say it's getting to a blink level, it's getting to a point where states are getting more and more serious, and Cliff Enico, who was on the show recently, said that he thought that there was actually a bill was going to be going through Congress very soon that would create some kind of an ability for states to collect taxes.
Well, that's something we'll have
sales
to
tax.
Look at.
Do you know how many sales tax districts there are, precincts there are, I guess you would call it?
No, I don't.
7,700.
Ooh.
That's how many different sectors people who do business online would have to keep up with.
Oh, wow.
So, but what you guys point out is that's one issue. But what you guys point out is about the retailers can no longer ride, the web market expansion. They got to go after existing customers to buy more. You're saying that they can't just count on the expansion of the internet, right?
Yes, right. They can't count on that to just bring more customers in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why not?
Well, that's a little bit. The main thing that I like to point out to small business owners, Joan, today with regard to e-commerce is it's not either or, traditional market versus cyberspace.
Right.
E-commerce.
Oh, you have to do
it's
both.
Not either
right.
or, it's both
right.
and.
Right.
And if you're a small business, ladies and gentlemen, if you sell anything at all, which you have to if you're a small business owner, you've got to be able to have a web presence. And unless you're selling services like consulting or something, which you can still do some of that online, I guess, you better have the ability to sell your products online. 29 after, stay with us.
Oh, yeah. And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. You just tuned in. Welcome aboard. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the Kiplinger letter, the one that Kiplinger produced this week. A little bit about what's going on in the world. Joan, according to Kiplinger, on page 2, look for this year's budget debt to fall below $200 billion.
Wow, break out the champagne.
How about that? Think about this, Joan. What does this mean? How could this possibly have happened? How could the budget... We know the government has to stop spending, right?
Yeah.
So how could this possibly have happened, that the budget would be falling?
Because more tax revenue is coming in,
because
it looks like.
Because more tax revenue has been created.
Yeah.
You've lurched uncontrollably again to the truth.
What's the matter with me?
That's exactly right. Now,
right.
So Joan, we've had an for the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh no, I think I know what's coming. Oh,
we've had a supply side economics.
Excuse me, I'm gonna go get a cup of coffee. I'll
slash
be back
dynamic score experiment going on the last few years. The taxes were lowered in 2003 significantly, and they've continued to be lowered a little bit more ever since, especially small business owners. And the small business, as you know, Joan, small business owners create over half of the U.S. economy.
Right.
The truth is, economy on planet Earth is Small Business USA.
I believe it.
You see what I mean? Because the U.S. economy is $13 trillion. It's more than half of the economy, the second closest one. And small business creates over half the U.S. economy. So therefore, Small Business USA is the largest economy on the planet.
Right.
And every time I talk to one of them, Joan, whether I'm talking to them in the United States or in Europe or wherever I talk to a small business owner, I ask them, if you had more of your tax dollars back, with those dollars, 100% instantaneously have always said, I would reinvest that in my company.
Ah.
They didn't say I'd go buy a new watch or
right.
a trip around the world. They said I'd put it back in my company. That's supply-side economics at work.
Okay.
And so if they put it in their company, then they create more opportunity, more jobs, as in 1.3 million more jobs this year, according to Kiplinger. And that creates dynamic score. Which is what you just reported, Joan, your letter reported, which was that the deficit is falling.
Yes.
So you give small business owners dollars back, they put it back in their company, they create opportunity, which creates tax revenue, which is dynamic scoring. It's the combination of supply-side economics and dynamic scoring. And, Joan, this experiment is no longer an experiment. It's actually a fact now.
That's what's happening, yeah, yeah.
Are you saying that I'm right, Joan?
Well... Did I say that?
So here's my point, Joan.
Yes.
What is it about that people who think they have a better idea don't like? I mean, what is it about? And I'm talking about Republican, Democrat. I don't care who it is. And I'm not giving any credit for this except small business owners. And you know, what is it about that kind of an economic scenario? Wouldn't it? What? Let's just keep this going.
Keep cutting taxes, you mean?
Well, I mean, at least make them permanent.
Make the tax cuts permanent.
Don't make us worry every other year that they're going to take this away from us.
Well, then politicians couldn't have any fun, so.
Well, I want politicians to have much fun. I want them to be a little more dour than they are. I want them to not have fun. But what they don't get, Joan, and here's you say that the Democrats will seize on this low debt. This is bizarre to me, Joan. Democrats will seize on the low deficit to justify more spending. Now, what does that mean? Explain that to me.
Well, Democrats have priorities like children's health care, education, job training, and the like. So they're willing to boost those programs, so they'll want to use that money to do that.
So they're saying, okay, since the deficit's down now, we can afford those things. Is that what you're saying?
You mean on children's health care, yeah. education, and job
uh-huh.
training? Yeah.
All those things, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So...
Not that they're important or anything. Just
no,
that,
not that they're important you know, or anything.
Yeah. But, children's but, health, job training, education. Yeah. Nothing important.
Well, the thing is... truth is, Joan, is if they had really, if both sides of the aisle had really wanted what you just said, they would already have it. Because they're in charge
well,
of it. They can
spending
do it.
A lot on guns instead of butter, you really can't.
Yeah, yeah, okay. You just had to get that little shot in
there.
Yeah,
sure.
20 till, we're going to be right back. Saved by the commercial, ladies and gentlemen. Joan and I will be right back after these messages. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame.
When you wake up in the morning and the light is hurt your head, the first
we're back at 7:02. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Joan Price, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, their publications are outstanding. Telling you about them. Of course, Joan and I work off of the Kiplinger Letter, which is about to celebrate 84 years in September. Is that right, Joan?
Unbelievable, but
1983.
True.
Joan was not an original employee, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
I know you.
You
were thinking that. But and that's the Kiplinger Letter. It comes out every week, Friday by email. You probably get it Monday if you have it by snail mail. I get it both ways. And then they have three biweekly letters, the Tax Letter, the California Letter, and the Culture Letter. Why not the Delaware Letter, Joan?
Hey, that's a good idea.
Why not the Iowa Letter?
Right.
You know, I need to know these things, Joan.
I'll find out.
California, I mean, so what, California?
Oh, yeah, big deal.
And then they have the magazine, folks, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, which many of you have seen on the newsstands, and
right.
you know quite a bit. And you guys get quoted a lot out of that magazine.
We do? That's good
yeah,
to know.
I saw something. They were quoting the Kipling. Oh, it was your top 25 mutual funds.
Yes.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I think that's one of our most popular issues when we
it's
do that.
It's a biggie. That one in the colleges, I think.
The colleges is big, too.
And maybe the automobile one. And also the lamp. I think the lamp
right.
edition is a big deal.
now.
And then the Kiplinger website, of course, Kiplinger.com. I put the G in there because sometimes when you say Kiplinger, it doesn't always come across. But Kiplinger.com.
Right. That's
Don't
right.
forget, you can subscribe. Also, make a phone call, right, Joan?
That's right. We've got a toll-free number. It's 800-544-0155.
Check it out and ask them for that 30-day free trial I worked so hard for to get you. Joan, let's move down. We were talking about the Gen Ys earlier in the show.
Right.
And you guys point out that you called it a hot topic among employers, how to keep Gen Y working happy. And, you know, books are being written, Joan, about the differences between Gen X and Gen Y.
Right.
So what do we do about all this?
Well, you have to remember that they've grown up with laptops, cell phones, and all the latest technology.
Everything
else. Right, exactly. And they're going to want firms that let them kind of make use of that technology in their work. Flex time, telecommuting, and that sort of thing is going to be very important, which I think is great because we've talked a lot about the business culture, which is very... and often of people who work at home. And I think a lot of people who work at home can be even more productive than they are in the office. But there's this idea that, you know, we have to have our eye on you all the time.
Joan, you know how progressive I am on this issue.
Yes.
But every person, and not just the person, not just the individuals, but their generations, have got to demonstrate to their employers that they can... This can't be an excuse for sloughing off. You know,
that's part of the problem to me is that companies go into these programs with that kind of attitude. And I think they have to give the employee a chance. You can figure out pretty quickly if the employee is producing or not.
I guess what I'm saying is I don't have a problem with it. Listen, I'm the guy who's been preaching teleworking for years.
Well, that's why I'm a little surprised at your
attitude. I've been teleworking. teleworking in the 70s, Joan.
Yeah.
But my point is, before I was a teleworker, I demonstrated to my boss that he could trust me as a teleworker.
Right.
And so I think what I'm getting at is...
But that's my point, is if you're kind of guilty, you know, without being proven innocent, is that why not just assume people can telework?
What I am concerned about is people starting out as a teleworker without ever having, you know, seen the productivity that can be acquired in a group environment. And so if you're alone, everybody can't be a teleworker, Joan. You know that, don't you? I mean, some people just can't make themselves be disciplined enough to be a teleworker. That's just a human. About human beings.
Well, then there must be people who can't work in an office too.
Exactly. There's no question about it. But that's my point. In my opinion, teleworking is and being home based is the way of the future. We're going to be educated that way in the future, Joan. I think all these brand new colleges are building are going to become obsolete before too long.
Yeah.
So I buy all that. I get all that. But in the workplace, I think we should evolve to teleworking when we hire somebody more often than just starting them out teleworking.
Well, what if you're hiring someone that already has been an entrepreneur working at home all the time?
That's an exception to what I'm saying.
Okay.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. No, I'm just saying that I don't think a Gen Y should show up and interfere for a job and start saying, okay, I might be willing to come to work for you, but I want to work from home.
Why is the presumption that they can work in an office and can't work at home, that they have to prove they can work at home but don't have to prove they can work in an office?
Well, and it's not about proof, Joan. It's about the way the company works. Maybe the company hasn't gotten to the point where they can, you know, make every company culture, and they are evolving. They are changing. More and more
but
companies are changing.
But I don't think they're changing fast enough.
Okay. So you know, Joan, I thought you were on the trail. But I'm starting to think you're a little bit of a Gen Xer here.
I wish.
and an acerbic one as well.
Well,
I might add.
That goes without saying.
And it's what we love about you too, Joan.
Yeah, right.
Quick break. We're going to come right back. We got a lot more stuff to come after these messages. Joan Pride is our guest. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Until I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our... Joan Kiplinger reports this week that the Supreme Court is becoming a little bit more pro-business. I like the way that sounds.
I figured you would.
Yeah.
And this is, of course, the Roberts Court with Chief Justice John Roberts in charge. Now, we're saying it's too early to call it pro-business, but so far, the record, the business's record is 5-2, which isn't bad.
We like that. Now, there was one loss, though, and this is a troubling one.
Oh,
it's
here we go.
The global warming.
We don't have
loss.
Time for you to get on your soapbox right now.
Well, yes, Joan, we'll make time. There's always time for that and for pudding, too, Joan.
Right.
The global warming loss was a big one, and that's a very troubling one. No, I think it's about time that the business got a fair shake in the Supreme Court.
And there's more rulings to come this year, so it'll be interesting to see as they wrap up the term, what else we see.
Joan, let's move down and talk about the desktop manufacturing. This is a term you don't hear everywhere, Joan. Desktop manufacturing. Tell us what that is.
Well, I've heard of desktop publishing, but this is kind of new to me. This says that you can manufacture things on your desktop. And it used to be confined to university labs, but now you can do computers, using prototype machines, you can build and test products in a couple of hours.
See, think about this, Joan. So many have gotten patents on things that they never had built actually,
okay.
or they built
oh,
a,
yeah,
a
sure.
maybe they built a crude prototype.
Right.
You know, it was mostly drawn out on paper, or they built a crude prototype, and it would be untested as a production model because it was all physical. It was, and it was not really, you know, they really couldn't afford to build. Exactly. But now with this new technology, and because it's becoming more incrementalized and
right.
the pricing is more incrementalized too, more and more people will be able to, it's been proven now that they can very well build and test a prototype in, you know, digitally speaking, and put it through all kinds of scenarios and show what you can expect and find the flaw so they can go back and work on it again and then create this. And I'm sure that this is going to be accepted. Digital manufacturing is going to be accepted from a patenting standpoint.
Wow, that sounds pretty exciting.
It's very exciting, and
yeah.
Now which leads us, Joan,
yes.
which moves us over. Let's move right over to page four and talk about China, because I, as you know, Ted Fishman is our China expert. He was just on the show. He says we have a horrible challenge, which we all knew, but he says it's not getting better on them, on the Chinese stealing our intellectual property.
Well, that's huge problem.
So the more we are able to create, see the only advantage, Joan, that we have in the United States with China, one of the few advantages that we have, our ability to innovate and to create things that other people want. Maybe, you know, the United States currently is the most innovative country on the planet.
Right.
But the Chinese is the knockoff capital of the world.
Boy, that's true.
China is, I should say.
Right.
And so if they can, I would think that this kind of technology to learn new ways to knock off our technology, knock off our intellectual property.
Right, exactly.
More effectively.
Right. Well, doesn't that scare you?
It does scare me.
Yeah.
Joan, we have infinitely more danger. There's infinitely more peril to us from the Chinese stealing our intellectual property than there is from them firing weapons at us.
Oh, I believe that, yeah.
In any kind of a war,
right.
The potential for that is not nearly as great. It's like 1% compared to the potential that they could knock off almost everything we make, which would be approaching 100%, Joan.
Yeah, that is very scary.
And our government is working on that, but they're not having much luck. And Ted was telling us that when the Chinese came here this month.
Mm-hmm.
In the month of May, I should say,
right.
when the Chinese came here for a meeting, they got off the plane, basically wagging their finger at us and saying,
"Oh no,
don't try to make us conform to your laws."
Oh,
no. That's a huge paraphrase, Joan. That I just gave you.
It sounds right to me.
But it's
yeah.
but it was according to Ted's words were their words off the plane was very strident.
Wow.
And so I'm concerned about this, Joan.
It's going to take a lot of doing to bring them into the fold.
I don't know what it's going to take, but it's not good for small business because you just pointed out that small business owners can be more innovative with this new technology.
That's right.
And we
That's
don't right. want China, so anybody stealing our stuff.
Exactly.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time.
That sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. She is the best and perhaps even the most acerbic. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.